This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When it comes to whether or not teenagers should be having sex, many American parents probably identify with Luke in the popular TV show Gilmore Girls. Here's a scene in which he walks into a bedroom and surprises his foster son Jess and his girlfriend.
What was going on up here?
I walk in here and the two of you are like shrapnel.
The timing is perfect, by the way. Next time we'll hang a sock on the door.
Hey, there will be no hanging of socks on the door in my house. Do you hear me?
Relax, I was kidding.
When she is up here, that door stays open. You may sit on the couch or on the chair, as long as you two are sitting on separate seats. I.e., when you're on the couch, then she's on the chair. When she's on the couch, then you're on the chair.
I get it, thank you.
I'm not joking here, mister.
So that's television. But it brings us to the real stories of two parents, a mother named Rhonda, who lives in California,
and a father named Carl, who lives in Holland. Both are white, middle class, and both are parents of teenagers. Carl keeps close tabs on his 16-year-old daughter, Heidi, and makes sure she keeps up with her schoolwork. When asked if he would object to Heidi having sex, he says no.
What about if Heidi wanted to spend the night with a steady boyfriend?
Again, Carl says no problem, as long as the boy didn't just show up out of the blue.
Now, in California, Rhonda has a radically different approach with her teenage son and daughter. She tells them, at this point, premarital sex is really dumb. When asked if she would let her 15-year-old son spend the night with a girlfriend, she responds viscerally, no way, Jose.
So, two stories about two very different cultures and how they approach teenage children and sex. They come from a soon-to-be-published book by Amy Shallet, a sociologist from the University of Massachusetts in Amherst.
Shallet, who grew up in Holland, interviewed 130 Dutch and American parents and teens about a number of issues, including sex. Here's what she found.
9 out of 10 Dutch parents had allowed or would consider sleepovers once their children turned 16 or 17. But 9 out of 10 American parents would not.
And here's her most surprising finding. Despite Holland's famously permissive attitudes, Dutch teenagers are far less likely to become pregnant or contract STDs. And they are far more likely to use contraception than American teenagers.
Amy Shallet's book is called Not Under My Roof, Parents, Teens, and the Culture of Sex. And she joins us here in the studio. And Amy Shallet, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. It's great to be here.
So you suggest that when it comes to teenagers and sex, Dutch parents normalize teenage sexuality, which actually helps them remain connected to their kids. What do you mean by normalizing teenage sexuality?
Okay, well, what I mean is that there's a strong emphasis on making sexuality something that can be talked about in the family, including, you know, ideally over dinner, that it becomes sort of a casual topic, but not casual in the sense that it isn't important or that there aren't certain moral rules. And I like to emphasize that because often looking from the outside in, Americans think of this as purely permissive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to emphasize that for Dutch parents, it's really about sex being okay once a young person is sort of in the later half of their teens and in a healthy relationship when they're in love. And mm-hmm. Dutch parents also believe that their kids can be in love. And in that context, they normalize
sure.
teen sex.
And it's an astounding statistic. According to your research, 9 in 10 wouldn't have a problem with this idea of teenagers sleeping over, sleeping in the same room together. What does that do for the overall relationship between teens and parents, according to what you found?
Okay, let me just begin by just slightly restating what you said.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't go as far as to say that 9 out of 10 wouldn't have any problem.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, part of what's interesting is that a fair number of Dutch parents are saying, well, you know, I think 16's too young, or I'd, you know, rather they wait. But still, I would, you know, they're cautious to say firmly no. And the reason is that as several parents say, I want to prevent secrets. I want them to prevent them from just going off and doing it somewhere else. And my argument is that this attempt to stay connected, to make young people feel like they can confide in their parents, allows parents and teenagers to keep on talking, and it allows parents to actually, ironically, have more control and influence than when they say absolutely not, under no condition.
Now, by contrast, you write that American parents tend to dramatize sex by focusing on the risks and dangers.
Right.
How so?
Well, in several different ways. First of all, there is just a lot of talk, not just in U.S. families, but I think in general, about closely associating teen sex with pregnancy, STDs, and so forth. But there's additional ways in which sex becomes viewed as very dangerous because parents talk and view teen sexuality as the product of raging hormones, which is hard for teens to control. And rather than having self-regulation, something that the Dutch parents emphasize. And second of all, it's dangerous because the U.S. parents tend to see teen sexuality not as a matter of, you know, young people falling in love and ideally forming healthy relationships, but what I call a battle of the sexes, where boys want one thing, girls want another thing, and they're kind of, you know, at it and out to get each other almost.
But some of these things, some of these sort of alleged dangers that you just suggested there, I mean, aren't they real? I mean,
sure.
If you're not if you're not ready for it, sex is dangerous. It's the age of AIDS and STDs and births out of wedlock and teenage pregnancies are skyrocketing in this country. These are real dangers, right?
Well, actually, I should mention one thing that is actually our pregnancy rates in this country have been going down. And of course there are real dangers, and that's not the question. But there are many aspects of growing up that involve dangers. It's how do you manage them, and do you think that young people have the capacities that can be cultivated to help protect them against those dangers? So one of the statistics that I cite frequently is that 6 out of 10 Dutch young women is on the pill or are on the pill when they first have sex. And that's an important statistic because that's an important way you can protect yourself against teen pregnancy. And what is the climate in which young people are able to talk to their parents, go and see a provider, think in advance, and anticipate the potential consequences of sexual activity? And certainly having sex too early is not a good thing, and I don't think any parent wants that for their child. But I think what the Dutch parents have more of a narrative around than U.S. parents is a concept of what is a positive development. You have a positive development, that sexual development is ideally gradual, happens over time, and initiated once youth are ready. Whereas the U.S. parents sort of lack, in many ways, an understanding of when is the right time.
And is part of that because this dialogue essentially doesn't happen?
It's the chicken and the egg, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, I think the dialogue doesn't happen because many parents don't know what to say,
sure,
other than be careful and these are the dangers. But I do think that when adults really can only say don't do it and don't have a cultural narrative on which to draw of under which conditions is it positive, is it a healthy part of adolescence, then it's also hard for them to guide their children and help them make those decisions. What's a good relationship? When am I ready? And anticipate what sexual behaviors are going to require, for instance, use of contraception.
Dutch parents, you suggest, may be more open, communicative with their teens about sex. Your research also suggests that they are willing to go that extra step, knowingly allowing their kids to have sex in their own home, for example.
Yes.
And I'm curious, as someone who grew up in the Netherlands, did that surprise you that the numbers were as large as they were around this issue?
I did grow up there, so of course I did see it around me, and I think that I was not surprised that most parents would consider it within the realm of the possible.
Sure.
You know, again, so that they didn't say the blanket no. I found also in other research, national research, that more or less backed up my numbers in that regard.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you're a sociologist, and I know this book is you're gathering empirical evidence here. It's observational, but you've also editorialized in the New York Times. You've suggested that we ought to rethink. We would be well served to sort of consider how the Dutch look at this issue, right?
Yes.
How far are you willing to go in sort of saying, as parents of teenagers, this is what you should let them do? Or you know, what is your recommendation here?
Well, my major recommendation is that parents create a climate in which their children feel comfortable letting them know what is happening. Too often in the United States, parents may think that they're creating that climate, but especially girls will say, you know, my mother would kill me, or I, you know, it'd be such a disappointment, I would never tell them. And so that does diminish what I call the parent-teen connectedness. Mm. And my major recommendation is parents are often told, you know, tell your teens what your values are around sexuality. But I think the more important thing, the equally important thing is tell teens that the relationship with your children is the most important thing. And research shows that is true, that when parents and teens can stay connected, that is good for young people's health and well-being more generally.
Listeners, we're talking to Amy Shallett. She's a sociologist from the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. She's the author of Not Under My Roof, Parents, Teens, and the Culture of Sex. And what do you make of what you're hearing? Do you think American parents would do well to consider the Dutch model of parenting? If you're a parent, how do you discuss sex with your teens? And where do you draw the line? Give us a call. Join the conversation. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I'm interested, too. You know, you've gone back to the Netherlands to research this issue as a sociologist. Can you tell us about your own personal experience? What was your parents' attitude toward this issue growing up, toward sex?
Well, to that, I will just say that, you know, I do approach this as a researcher, not as a memoirist. So I'm going to
bat that question away.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Certainly growing up between two cultures gave me much food for thought, and moving back and forth between them.
Well, I think that's where I was going with that
yes.
question. I mean, you know, I didn't mean to probe too personally, but I just thought that as someone who has straddled those two
yeah.
cultures, you have a perspective that would be worth hearing from. And you know, again, I know that this book is about research, but there's also sort of observational interest here.
Well, I mean, there's several things that I can say that informed this project. One is when I moved back, I was American born, grew up in the Netherlands. When I moved back to this country, I was very surprised to see that teenage pregnancy was still an issue, because I had learned in Holland that it was an issue of the past. So I kind of was wondering, what are the factors that get in the way, for instance, of young people asking, going to their parents, getting help from providers? Maybe they're not receiving the sex education they need. Other things that surprised me when I moved back were that young people's relationships did not seem to be taken seriously here. Hmm. So I think I mentioned the Dutch parents believe that young people can fall in love. That's a major reason that makes it easier for them to talk about when sex is okay and when it isn't, and what are the conditions. Here, I experienced, when I came back, I was here in Cambridge, actually, when I came back from the Netherlands, and I remember people asking me about a then boyfriend, are you going to marry him? As if, you know, that was the only time you would take a relationship seriously. And I think that's a piece, too, when you just ask me what should we do. I think that understanding that young people's relationships need to, and their feelings need to be taken on their own terms, and that we might want to think of another model, not
sure.
just, yeah.
Let's get a couple of callers in. We're talking to Amy Shallett about her book, Not Under My Roof. Let's go to Julia, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Julia.
Hi. I work pretty closely with teens in Lawrence, Boston, Cambridge. And I'm wondering what the caller or what the author has to say about different cultural identities within the United States in regards to sexuality, because I know there is a big variety of different teen pregnancy rates between Latina young women, Black young women, Asian, and I'm just wondering what the author's thoughts are on that.
Sure, Julia. Great. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Amy?
Well, I'm really glad you raised that issue, because there are huge differences between different cultural groups, but the key thing there tends to be differences based not so much on ethnicity as it is really a measure of poverty. So everywhere across the industrial world, poverty tends to predict early childbearing for a variety of reasons. If you don't have other options, or if you don't have access to education, good jobs, childbearing becomes an entry into adulthood. And the U.S. has much higher poverty rates than other European countries. So that's an important factor. And within the U.S., poverty rates tend to be much higher among Hispanic and African-American groups. So that's a very important piece as well.
You know, with regard to this discussion about teenage births in developed nations, I'm looking right in front of me. I showed you this before we went on the air, Amy, a UNICEF chart here. And the United States, it's visually quite stunning. The United States is far out ahead of any other country, with 52.1 teenage births per 1,000 teenagers, basically. And you have to go all the way up, almost to the very tippity top of this list, until you get to Holland, which is Netherlands, 6.2 per 50. So it's quite amazing. Do we know that? I mean, can you make a link to the kind of attitudes you're talking about within the Dutch home that relate to these kinds of statistics on birth rates?
I think you can. I mean, first, just nitpicky social science thing. The rates have gone down slightly since then. Those are older rates, and birth rates in the U.S. today are closer to 40 per 100 or per thousand.
Good.
But yes,
okay.
You're
right. This is a UNICEF report from a few years ago. So
I do want to mention that, because there has been, you know, what we would consider good news and dropping rates in that regard. But yes, I do think you can make a link. Of course, there are many factors that play a role, and the lower poverty rates are one of them. There are also access to health care, sex education. These are all important pieces. But I think when you do look at a statistic like the one I mentioned before, 6 out of 10 Dutch girls are on the pill at the time of first intercourse, that means that they have been able to recognize within themselves, oh, this is something I might do. And they've been able to ask a trusted adult about that. I think that in order for young women to be able to be sort of anticipatory in that way and recognize their own sexuality, they need to be recognized by adults as having those capacities. And so I think, yes, but I also think you can't totally take the family out of the larger contexts in which families operate.
Let's take another call. Joan is calling from Medfield. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
This is a great topic. I was just stating that my son, who went off to college, has met a young woman, and I've allowed them to come home on the weekend, both of them, and stay together in the same room, and had later learned that, you know, several months into the relationship, that the girl had not even she wasn't on birth control because she was very afraid to approach her parents. And so after, you know, a long talk, and we got that all straightened out, she did finally approach her parents, but was given a guilt talk and all of this stuff. Mm. And it's very different when my son goes to her house. He has to sleep in the basement, and she has to go upstairs, and it makes me kind of feel like a bad parent.
Oh, dear, Joan. Sorry to hear that. Joan, thanks for the call. This is a great issue. Amy, of course, you know, one parent's set of norms only applies to one kid. There are two kids in a relationship like this. What do you say to Joan?
Well, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, is the first thing I would say. I do think, of course, for parents, it's easier to negotiate these kinds of sleepovers in a culture where, while parents might range at what age they think is appropriate, in general, most parents agree that it's okay in a steady relationship. Within the U.S., it's different. And it's not just young women who get the guilt trip, as we just heard. And I do call that sort of a psychic burden, which I think makes development more difficult for young women when they do get that. But often parents get a guilt trip too. And I had one parent who approached me after my New York Times editorial, and she had agreed to let her daughter spend the night with a serious boyfriend, and felt very alone in that, and felt that it was difficult to confide. And so it is, I think, a good thing to open up this discussion. In the U.S., there tends to be the idea that if you're a good parent, you say no.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that having a wider understanding of what good parenting in this area means would be a good thing.
Let's go to Jay, who's calling from Medford. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I have a son, and he expressed interest in girls and sex at a pretty young age, and he's still a preteen, and I'm really concerned. I mean, you're talking a lot about girls, but, you know, boys seem to be just more urgent and more curious and not really that interested in emotion and feeling. And I'm really concerned about how I'm going to try to convince him to wait or convince him to really be expressive and communicative. So what do you think about that? You're talking a lot about girls and their issues, but what about boys?
Amy, some tough questions from these listeners out here.
No, I love it. I love it. I like the tough questions. I think it's because I think it's an excellent point. What about boys? We usually sort of associate with girls so much. I think there's several things about boys. The first thing is, one statistic I love to cite from the Netherlands is, in a national survey, 90% of 14-year-old Dutch boys say they've been in love. And while that might stun us as Americans, in my own research, I found that lots of U.S. boys are also quite romantic, and they're quite interested in forming emotional attachments, but they tend to not be validated in those emotions. And I'm certainly not saying that the caller who just spoke is doing that. That doesn't sound like that at all. But I do think that our culture at large teaches boys things like, oh, you think of sex every few seconds and so forth. But we don't recognize that boys too can and often do look for deeper emotional connection. And the second point I would make is that in this culture, we tend to talk about sex just as intercourse. Mm. Most people would agree that early teens, that's too early for intercourse. But if we could talk about sexuality in a broader sense that validates other forms of sexual intimacy that are more age appropriate and teach young people to go slow, you know, I think...
Let me ask you one last question. Of course,
sure.
You've had your critics. When you editorialized in the New York Times, you heard back from a few people who raised this issue, and it was also contained in a Heritage Foundation report on this issue. And they found that depression and incidents of suicide were about three times as prevalent among sexually active teen girls compared with teens who aren't having sex. What about the emotional consequences of sex at such a young age?
Well,
and are these real concerns?
I'm gonna make 3 points,
okay.
And I'll make them fast.
Okay.
The first is the Heritage Foundation and research. I would like to see that, whether that has gone through a rigorous peer review process. The second is that research that did go through rigorous peer reviewed process in the American Journal of Sociology found that in fact sex is not associated for most teens associated with depression, especially not if it's in relationships. And third, we really need to distinguish between very early sexual experiences, which often are associated with other unfortunate background factors, and sex during the second half of the teens, when young people may be ready.
Sure, got it. The book is Not Under My Roof, Parents, Teens, and the Culture of Sex. Amy Shallet, sociologist at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, thanks so much for coming in. Fascinating topic. We appreciate your time. Coming up are weekend arts picks and the surprising, suspenseful, true history of American healthcare reform. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.